This podcast is brought to you by Australia's LGBTQIA+ community media organisation, Joy. Keep Joy on air by becoming a member, a subscriber, or donate. Head to joy.org.au. Joy, a diverse sound for a diverse community.
This is The Informer, a Joy 94.9 podcast. This podcast was made possible with support from the Community Broadcasting Foundation. To support the production of content like this, donate at cbf.com.au.
This Joy podcast may contain language or themes that are not suitable for all listeners. If you're experiencing difficulty, please reach out for support. You can reach QLife, an anonymous and free LGBTI support service, by calling 1800 184 527 or call Lifeline 24 hours a day on 13 11 14 for crisis support and suicide prevention. In an emergency, please call 000.
A new study has found lesbian, gay, bisexual and questioning adolescents are worse off than their heterosexual peers across a number of health and well-being outcomes. The University of Queensland study analysed data from over 10,000 young Australians and identified 30 health outcomes where LGBTQ youth were disadvantaged. University of Queensland PhD student Alice Campbell spoke to The Informer's Nicholas Kamenia-Sandry about uncovering the alarming gap in health outcomes.
We analysed some data that has been collected as part of the longitudinal study of Australian children. So that's a large study that has been running for the past 15 years, following a large group of children from all over Australia. And it interviews their family and the children every 2 years, asking them like a large range of questions about all different aspects of their lives. So we were looking at data that was collected specifically in 2014, when the oldest group of children in the study were 14 to 15 years of age. And this was the first year that the children had been asked about their sexual orientation. So they were actually asked a question about their sexual attractions, thinking about their sexual feelings at this time in their life. Who are they attracted to? Are they attracted to males, to females, to both, to nobody, or were they unsure? And this is generally considered the most appropriate way to measure sexual orientation in early adolescence, because young people may not have engaged in any sexual behaviour yet. Many young people won't have. And also, in terms of identity and how a young person identifies, that's something that might still be forming. It might still be, something that they're, in progress of working on. So asking about their attractions is generally considered the best way for that young age group. So we were looking at the responses to that item in the children. So we had, young people, we had over 3,000 that participated in that wave of the study at 14, 15 years of age. And so we looked at the young people who said they were only attracted to the opposite sex. And we were comparing their health and well-being outcomes to the young people who said they were attracted only to the same sex or attracted to both sexes or who said they were unsure of who they were attracted to. And so in terms of the outcomes that we looked at, we just went through the survey and the interviews, and we tried to identify every health and well-being outcome that we could. So we came up with 30 in total because we wanted to sort of get the most global picture, I guess, the broadest picture of what was happening in terms of health and well-being and where differences were, where the differences were the greatest, that kind of thing. And so some of those were the child themselves had reported on their health and well-being. Most of them were reported by the child, but some were also the parent had reported on the child's health. So we looked at as many different measures as we could, and that's really what we were doing, comparing those groups on those 30 different outcomes.
So what were the significant results of the study when comparing LGBTQ adolescents with their heterosexual peers?
We actually found that as a group, the LGBTQ group were faring significantly worse than their heterosexual peers on all 30 outcomes. The size of the difference between the groups varied. So in some cases it was quite large, in other cases it was quite small, but on all 30 outcomes, the LGBTQ young people were doing significantly worse. So the outcomes that we found, the largest differences, so where the LGBTQ young people were the most disadvantaged, were actually things like self-harm and suicide thoughts and plans, socio-emotional problems and peer problems. The outcomes where the difference was sort of the smallest were things such as sleep quantity and quality, and also some substance use, so smoking, drinking, using marijuana, that sort of thing. So those differences were small, and yeah, getting up to the suicide, self-harm, depressive symptoms, those differences were getting much larger.
Does this give you any indication of what might be the cause of this difference? Like, is it a direct cause, as in like LGBTQ youths are facing a lot more obvious pressures such as bullying or discrimination, or are there other factors that might key into this?
We didn't, in this particular study, we weren't trying to identify the mechanisms, but we do have some good indications from research that's been conducted in other countries, particularly the United States, about what some of those mechanisms are. And it is actually something that we're starting to look into now. So absolutely, those social factors. So whether it's at the interpersonal level, so an experience of bullying, things that happen at school, things that happen in your own family in terms of, you know, rejection, or lack of acceptance when a child comes out to their parents, those sort of things. But it also sort of scales up into in that broadest level. So we talk about, in academic terms, structural stigma, but that's really just sort of, you know, guest stigmatization of non-heterosexuality that happens at the broadest level. So in terms of policies and legislation. So we know that that's starting to decrease in Australia. So same-sex marriage has been legalised, but that's one example. So when same-sex marriage wasn't legal, that's a very good example of structural stigma. And we know that these things impact the health and well-being of lesbian, gay, bisexual young people and adults as well.
How does the data on the adolescent age group compare with adults?
So my co-author on this study has recently conducted a very similar study with an adult population, so a national sample of Australian adults, and found very similar outcomes. The outcomes are probably worse in adolescents, unfortunately. We do know that this is a vulnerable time for everybody. So, you know, adolescence can be a difficult time. There's a lot of things going on, a lot of things that we have to grapple with in terms of our identity, our relationships and all that sort of thing. So it seems to be an acutely vulnerable time for our non-heterosexual young people. And we believe from previous research and theories that this is largely because of some of these environments, like the school environment, which is not always a supportive environment for LGBTQ young people, and what goes on in some families as well. So these are environments that young people don't have much choice about participating in. They're compulsory. They have to go to school. And when you're 14, 15 years of age, it's very hard to move away from your family. So if those environments aren't supportive, that's a very stressful thing for these young people.
What would you think would be the next step in response to this analysis of the data? Is there something else that we need data on? Is there something that we need to look into in order to try and address this discrepancy between LGBTQ and heterosexual adolescents?
Yeah, absolutely. So we definitely need to more clearly identify the mechanism. So more clearly identify what is happening in these young people's lives that is impacting them in this way, that, you know, this negative impact on their health and well-being. So we have some good ideas about things happening in the family and schools in particular, but we need to get some really good evidence on that. And then we need to look at how can we intervene? What can we do in these environments so that we address these health disparities? So, again, there's some evidence from the United States that, like, gay straight alliances in schools are really protective of the health and well-being of young LGBTQ people. So that's something that we need more evidence on in Australia. Things like education programs with school staff, with parents, that sort of thing. So we really need to identify what the mechanisms are, how do we intervene, how do we address these disparities. And another thing that we weren't able to look at in this study, but that's also really important, is looking at gender identity. And that's something we weren't able to look at because that question hadn't been asked in this particular wave of the survey. But it's something for future research, definitely, to see the health and well-being of our gender-diverse young people in Australia.
That was University of Queensland's Alice Campbell talking to Nicholas Kamenia-Sandry. If that story raised issues for you, please call Lifeline on 13 11 14, or for LGBTQI plus specific support, call QLife on 1800 184 527, qlife.org.au.
Thanks for listening to another Joy podcast, brought to you by Australia's LGBTQIA+ community media organisation, Joy. Help us keep Joy on air. Head to joy.org.au. Joy, a diverse sound for a diverse community.